Hey, Mr. Mayor, how are you? Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Yes, same to you. Hope
Thank
you
you.
Planning a lot of fun.
Yes, and I have been, so it's been okay. It's been a very merry holiday so far, and thank you.
Great.
Thank you for joining us. And I'm sorry I can't see you on this Zoom, which is kind of weird, you know, but and you can't see me. But next time we'll do this in person. But
that was a good plan.
Good. Thank you. So listen, no, I was monitoring the off topic today. OK. And I know there was a lot of discussion about this level one law that the council is looking at and discussing and probably coming to a vote tomorrow. But public advocate Jumaane Williams, he just had a Zoom conference, news conference about 20 minutes ago, half hour ago. And he says the level one stops do not include tourists asking for directions, a search for a missing cat. Some of the references that you and Lisa made in the off topic. So he says you're giving out misguided and misinformation and misrepresenting something. So what do you say to that? And how are you interpreting level one stops?
Level one stops are determined by law. And it is any interaction where you are carrying out a service to the public. And so I'm not sure if he's clear on the law. This is a law from a court ruling. And so that is what our fear is. Our fear is that many people who are about to vote on this law, as well as the public advocate, is not clear that level one stops are not only for those that are criminally connected. And that is the problem.
Do you think at some point this goes to court and somebody has to make a distinction about what a level one stop is? Is it just about asking for directions? Is it just about, you know, a missing cat or a rescue of, some animal caught in the drain? Or is it about, let's say, a proactive activity by an officer approaching somebody?
Well, I made sure that I spoke with my legal counsel when I first heard opposition to this new proposed law. She spelled out, as she did at the off-topic conference today, she read exactly what the law states and what's a definition of a level one stop. And I'm not clear if the advisors of the counsel and the public advocate, if they are correctly giving them the definition of a level one stop. So if they are saying that we don't want everyday interactions like giving directions, et cetera, then they need to carve that out of the bill and states in the bill that level one stops except for A, B, C, and D. And then that would be a bill that we can stand and stand with in support of.
Oh, OK. So who's negotiating with them? You said in the off topic that there have been some discussions going on. Is that what you're looking at specifically? And is that you personally doing that or somebody in the administration?
I spoke directly with the speaker who shared with me what her vision of what this bill should do. And it is in opposite to what the bill is actually calling for. She wanted, when people are conducting any form of criminal investigation, for the most part, that it is documented. She did not want any time an officer speaks with a civilian that we need to carry out a documentation. That just flies in the face of using our police officers' resources properly.
Okay. So that's something that's going to have to get straightened out.
Yes.
If this comes to a vote tomorrow, maybe there's a challenge somewhere. No?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we're going to continue to use the next few hours trying to encourage the council to be clear on the goal that they're trying to reach. If they're stating they are not trying to reach a goal of every time a police officer speaks to a civilian that they should have to document it, then they need to be clear that the bill is not stating that. And right now, it is not correct.
Okay, there we go. We just got to the crux of the matter here. Okay, good luck with that.
Thank you.
I also wanted to ask you, because this came up as well, and this was a question I'd been thinking about. You know, Governor Abbott in Texas is calling for the arrest of immigrants who aren't arriving at the borders with legal authorization. Now, he says he's doing this because the Biden administration isn't doing enough to help, and they're not really doing much, as and you have stated that you're not getting that help. So what further strategies do you have for migrant care or to get settled or to move them, you know, further on or limit their arrival? And why don't you think the Biden administration is doing more?
Well, as you know, I traveled to Washington 10 times to talk about giving us the support we need, a decompression strategy, as well as the financial assistance, and most importantly, allowing the migrants and asylum seekers to work. The mere fact that people come to the country and seek asylum, we cannot arrest them for coming in seeking asylum. So I don't know quite what policy Governor Abbott is going to institute. I know that he has created a major problem here in our city. He has targeted the city as well as Chicago and other large cities. It is important now that we continue to have all of our congressionals and senator leaders to collaborate on making sure that we come up with not only long-term true immigration reform, but really take this burden off of our local cities. This is a national problem, and local cities should not have to bear the weight of a national crisis.
So when you have had these 10 meetings, and I know they've been with Perez and other, you know, White House officials and et cetera, do you ask them, why aren't you doing more? What do they tell you?
We do all the time. I think that there's a real disconnect on the crisis that's playing out in some of these major cities. We can't treat this as a policy. We have to treat it as a crisis. And the level of urgency must reach that expectation, because it is really harming these cities. We're seeing what's playing out in Chicago. People are sleeping in precincts. And Massachusetts, people are sleeping in hospitals. We have been successful not having any child or family sleep on the streets, but we are clearly across the tipping point. And I'm not sure if the national leaders understand the urgency that's playing out on the ground.
Have you ever, like, invited President Biden here to say, come walk with me, or come over to the Roosevelt Hotel, or come to Floyd Bennett Field and see what's going on here?
No, I have never given him a formal invitation, but many of his representatives have come here and looked at what we have done here. Many people commend us for being able to handle over 150,000 migrants and asylum seekers. But the fact is, more people should come on the ground and see what it is doing to the city and the impact that it is having on our economy.
Do you think he would come? If you personally invited him and said, come with me, and like, I will walk you through what is happening here, you think he would come?
I'm not sure if he would or not, but I think that there are enough of his officials that have been here, enough of the congressional leadership that have been here, that they understand how substantial this crisis is.
Okay. I wanted to move to congestion pricing. I know that is not something you have overt control over, but you do have influence, obviously, as the mayor, and this is your city. And I was wondering, you've been asking about or suggesting that there should be more carve-outs and more exemptions. How about the New York City residents who live in the zone? You know, when they come home, I hear this from people, they come home and they're going to have to pay to come home to get back in the zone. How is that fair?
Well, first we should look at the zone we're talking about. There's clearly a trade-off in living in the congestion zone. It has the best transportation system in our city. Crosstown transportation, north and south transportation, That's the trade-off. There is really no mandatory reason for people to need to drive a vehicle in a area where the transportation is the best that the city has to offer. Taxpayers built out the infrastructure in that zone, and people should be utilizing public transportation. And so it's challenging to say, okay, what about those who live in a zone that taxpayers built out the best transportation system, I believe, in the country, my personal opinion.
Yeah, but what people who like work outside, they do a reverse commute, say, and they mm-hmm. have to use a vehicle to get to someplace on Long Island or somewhere in Jersey, and then they come back. And now they got to pay $15 to get home. Like, how is that okay?
The what we do know, and particularly those people who live in the zone, the toxic fumes from automobiles, those fumes are taking years off our lives. We have a real congestion problem. We have to address it. And this is one of the mechanisms that we're using. We should do it in a manner that won't displace toxic fumes to the outer boroughs, that is not overburdensome of those who live in and out of the zone, and those who are in need of using a vehicle to go into Manhattan. And that's the balance that we must look at. And no matter what we do, no one is going to walk away with saying that they 100% agree. No one wants to pay $15. No one wants to pay additional costs on anything. But we do have a real problem with congestion. Not only is it hurting our environment, but it is also impacting the economics of doing business in our city because of the problem of congestion.
All right. Okay. Now, you just mentioned balance. And I wanted to ask you about balance when it comes to your budget. Now, last night in Queens, you and I know you've mentioned this before in some of your briefings, you know, when I know I've asked you, are you going to have to raise taxes? Are you going to have to look at layoffs? And you say you got to find the sweet spot. What for you is that sweet spot?
The delivery of services and finding efficiency, innovation, and creativity on how do we continue to deliver the services that is needed to not have this city slip backwards. January 2022, I inherited a city that was moving in the wrong direction around crime, around economy, and around other areas. We don't want to go backwards. And so that looks like if we have to do some form of hold off on doing a police class like we did, how do we make up grounds by deploying our police and mobilizing them better? So each one of these areas, we can't take away getting the quality of life that we want, but we do know we have to find efficiencies any and every way we can to deal with this unsustainable crisis that has been dropped in our laps.
Do you have, let's say, a criteria or a cap, 5% budget cut, another, couple of percent, where you get to 10%, you go, that's it, we can't do anymore? Have you imagined that, or Jacques Jiha imagining some sort of cap on that?
And that's a great question, because this problem is such a moving problem that it's not as though we're saying, okay, we have 150,000, and so now we just have to price out what it's going to take to cycle people out of the system. We moved and stabilized over 50% of the people who came through our system.
57.
Exactly.
As Fabian said, 57. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. But the problem is they keep coming in. We had 3,900 mm-hmm. last week.
Wow.
When you start getting 4,000, close to 4,000 a week, 8,000 every 2 weeks, 16,000 a month, that is just unmanageable. And so it's difficult to say what's not on the table when there's no end in sight. No end in sight is coming from the border, and no end in sight is coming from the governor. A friend of mine was on a plane a few days ago coming from a different state, and they said almost 70% of the people on the plane were migrants and asylum seekers. That's that's not sustainable, and the flow is difficult to state in a very predictable manner what the right budget is as long as this continues to happen.
All right. So this is a work in progress.
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Talk about quality of life. I was wondering if you had a chance to walk along 6th Avenue recently. This is from about 45th Street to 51st Street. I was there the other night, and I saw vendors literally blanket to blanket, cart to cart on the west side of the street, the sidewalk, right? And it's on both sides of the sidewalk. And so there's very little space for anybody to really walk down that block. There was a disabled woman in front of me with her scooter. She really couldn't get through. You know, there's a lot of tourists here in the area right now. And, you know, these vendors are selling knockoff handbags, the knit caps and the scarves. It's the same stuff over and over. And I can't imagine they have licenses, and I can't imagine that the stuff is legit. So are you concerned about the optics of that, or if it's a safety issue, and why is this allowed to be this way?
And you agree. I agree with you. And we've done several initiatives on on Canal Street in Manhattan. We were seeing similar problems in Manhattan, in Queens. We have been zeroing in on some of these illegal vending. But what I like to say to New Yorkers over and over again is that I need to constantly point out the byproducts of the migrants and asylum seekers problem. When you don't allow people to work, they go into the black market and they start doing things that impact our quality of life. And illegal vending is one of them. Many of the migrants and asylum seekers have started to do illegal vending, everything from selling food to clothing and other items. These are the various byproducts to the migrant and asylum seeker crisis that we are facing. And when I talk about it is harming our cities, this is what I'm talking about. It's not only the shelters, it's not only the cost, it is also the quality of life issue that we're starting to see.
So can something be done about that scene there and just, you know, either clearing something or making it a better passageway for, you know, people to walk? What can be done there?
Yes, and we're going to do just that. I'm going to speak with the commissioner, have his team go over there. We have a team of vendor enforcement. We also have DCWP, the Deputy Commissioner of Workers Protection, and go and engage with the people that are there. But what has often happened, individuals will pack up and move to another location. Mm-hmm. The desperation of providing for your family, have you do things that are sometimes illegal and also impact on the quality of life of our city. And that's what we're faced with right now.
Right.
The byproducts of the migrant crisis.
Yes, because I'm sure there are some of the people that are there are part of that. And this is what they're trying to do to make some money. And I get that. All right, we'll have to see what happens. It was just such a crowded, like overcrowded situation that I was like,
yes,
this was not like cool.
We will look at that.
Okay, great. That's great. So I wanted to ask you, being that this is the holiday season, and I'll wrap up on this question. You know, everybody likes their treats and goodies, and I know you try to be very good with your diet. So I just wanted to know, like, what do you eat for the holidays? How do you treat yourself, and do you cheat?
Whomever states they do not cheat on the holidays, they are lying. You know, I love different treats, but I've learned to use different alternatives. Like I have a sweet tooth, and so I will use molasses as a sweetener, or date sugar as a sweetener, or learn how to use bananas as my moisturizer when I cook some type of pastries. And so there are ways to get the taste you're looking for, but in a more healthy way.
Hey, I'm taking notes here on that. That's actually a really good idea.